This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Talks to get the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal up before the U.S. House failed to score a breakthrough last week after Speaker Pelosi said she doubts USMCA has enough time left to pass this year. Pelosi and Ways Means Chairman Richard Neal met with Trump Trade Ambassador Robert Lighthizer, but failed to bridge key sticking points on enforceability despite some progress on remaining issues. The news came just hours after Pelosi told reporters the clock probably has run out on passing USMCA this year, arguing that without stronger enforcement mechanisms, the deal's not worth it.
Just think of yourself as a worker out there who's been affected by trade, felt very betrayed by NAFTA. We have a responsibility to drastically improve the situation, that is to say, to make it real. Not just NAFTA with sugar on top, but a change in the fundamentals of it, so that you have enforceability.
But Republicans, some with trade experience, argue USMCA, unlike NAFTA, is enforceable. Rob Portman is a U.S. senator from Ohio and a former trade chief under President George W. Bush.
Labor and environmental standards, which are weak and not enforceable in the NAFTA agreement, and in USMCA, they are. So that's a big change in and of itself. This is not just a name change. This is a fundamental change in the way in which we relate to our neighbors to the south and to the north.
USMCA represents 12 million U.S. jobs, $28 billion in trade, and more than $2 billion in desperately needed new U.S. ag sales to Canada and Mexico. But now, nearly a year after USMCA was signed, and months of White House talks on briefing it to a vote, the clock may have just run out on the president's promised NAFTA replacement, replaced instead by bitter politics and impeachment. U.S. legislation supporting Hong Kong protesters didn't stop China's trade chief from making a phone call recently to invite U.S. negotiators to a new round of trade talks. The Wall Street Journal says U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin were invited to Beijing for a more face-to-face trade negotiation. While it wasn't immediately clear if U.S. officials said yes to the invitation, the Wall Street Journal says U.S. trade officials were willing to meet with their Chinese counterparts. The U.S. Trade Representative's office has yet to respond to requests for comment. The report on Chinese invitation comes shortly after U.S. legislation on Hong Kong has threatened to push trade talks between the world's biggest economies off track. Last week, the U.S. House of Representatives passed two bills intended to show support for protesters in Hong Kong. Beijing then accused the U.S. of interfering in its domestic affairs. The trade experts and people close to the Trump administration say the limited trade agreement could be pushed into next year, news which is not good for U.S. agriculture. The U.S. and China both have imposed tariffs totaling billions of dollars on each other's goods. Moving on now to state ag news, the turkey is the centerpiece of the holiday meal during your Thanksgiving celebration. Don't let the turkey become the centerpiece of everyone's sickness because it was not prepared correctly. Sue Smith is a turkey talk line expert with Butterball. She says the turkey is average around 14 to 16 pounds, and your first step is to be sure the bird is completely thawed before any preparation.
And there's two ways to do that. You can go ahead and put it right into your refrigerator. That takes one day for every 4 pounds of turkey. And you can also soak it in cold water. That's your quicker way. It takes about 30 minutes per pound. But regardless of what way you do, you want to always keep it cold, and that's 40 degrees or below.
You can speak with any of the many turkey talk experts at Butterball by calling 1-800-BUTTERBALL. Smith says there are a few common misconceptions when it comes to cooking a turkey.
One is that they have to baste the turkey throughout the process. We do recommend putting some vegetable oil on top of the turkey before you put it in the oven. But once it's in the oven, you don't have to do anything further. A lot of people like to, you know, get the juices and open the oven up, baste the turkey with those juices, close the oven door. And they do that every 20, 30 minutes. We get a lot of questions, too, on they don't have a flat rack. You want to elevate that turkey a little bit in that shallow open pan just to get that air circulation around the entire turkey. So if you don't have a flat rack, that's fine. You could put some carrots or celery down on the bottom of your pan, and that will elevate the turkey. You can also get some foil, and it's called a foil coil, and just make it into like a snake real long and roll it up and then put it in circles and put it that on the bottom of your pan, and that's a great way to elevate your turkey as well. So you don't have to go out and spend money to get a flat rack if you don't have one.
You can even text the Turkey Talk expert like Sue Smith at 844-877-3456. And there's more information, recipes, and even a product line by visiting Butterball.com. Moving on now to local ag news. The Central Illinois Livestock Association held their pre-holiday dinner and meeting at 4C Winery in Coffeen last Wednesday. Special guest of the evening was Jill Johnson of the Illinois Beef Association, and I was able to talk to Jill about the current issues in the beef industry. Okay, Jill, and we're at the meeting of the Central Illinois Livestock Producers here before the holidays, their annual meeting down here at 4C Winery in Coffeen, and you joined the group here to discuss the topics and just different things in the beef industry at the current time and even in the livestock industry. Most notably, the difference between plant-based beef and real beef, and that's a big topic going on right now.
Absolutely. So I'm pleased to be here at the meeting this evening, and plant-based protein and then real beef is definitely sort of the issue of the year and something that we talk about quite often. So I shared with the group this evening what we're doing, both on the policy side. That's where the Illinois Beef Association can be a little bit more harder hitting on those issues there, and then also what we're doing to promote beef on the checkoff side of things.
And one question that was brought up that I thought was a very good question was that there's really no set rules yet. It's kind of all in limbo, and the same thing is that they're not really requiring plant-based beef to be on the same sort of regulations as beef. And that's a big issue with the livestock producers here in mid-Illinois.
Absolutely. So we've got several different alternative proteins that we talk about. There's the plant-based burgers, which have been around for a long time, but what we're seeing happening is sort of a different marketing strategy. And so it's, you know, the great thing about this country is with a safe food system, yet you have a lot of options. But what we want to make sure that people are aware of is beef, you know, beef tastes great. Beef is still the king of protein. And then helping people understand just those ingredients that go into these plant-based burgers that certainly do not constitute them to be called beef. And then just the nutritional profile of real beef, the zinc, the iron, the protein, and how important it is as part of a well-balanced diet. And then we look at another alternative protein, which is the lab-grown protein products. Something that IBA and we're working on definitely on a national level is making sure that those products are regulated correctly, especially in terms of marketing claims and labeling, and have the proper oversight when we talk about food safety. So beef as a product is inspected every day, and if another new alternative protein product is going to come onto the market that people are going to consume, we want to make sure that it's safe and inspected just as judiciously.
And when we move on to, of course, we spoke a little bit about African swine fever, of course, the livestock producers. That's something that beef has not really had been dealing with as any big epidemic around the world. But what is the Illinois livestock, or at least Illinois beef, doing to kind of combat any possible issues that could arise in the beef industry?
Right. So we see African swine fever as such a threat to the pork industry, but still very much a threat to both beef and pork is foot and mouth disease. And so one of our policy priorities was making sure a fully funded foot and mouth disease vaccine bank was part of the 2018 Farm Bill, and it is. So now what we're working on is making sure that we're able to implement that. And more than anything, you know, helping our farmers understand if and more concerning when there is a foreign animal disease outbreak, what steps you need to take to be prepared, especially when we talk about the movement of cattle and if there were a disease outbreak, indemnity payment. So it's important in that event, you have to have a premise ID for that. So just helping understand if this hits us, what we need to do to be prepared.
And one more topic that I'd like to touch on here. We also, the group talked about BQA and how important that is. So I'm sure a lot of producers out there know what it is, but for those that might need a reminder, you know, let's talk about that.
Absolutely. So the Beef Quality Assurance Program for the beef industry is a voluntary program, a producer-led program, and it really started as a way to improve the quality of beef, and has, you know, in the last 20 years really evolved into our most important sort of consumer confidence tool. So very much about animal health and welfare and care. We cover some biosecurity in the program. So a full gamut of conversation in terms of proper animal handling and beef production practices. But more importantly, we're seeing it as something that consumers are starting to recognize and say, you know, I want to make sure that my beef is raised in a way that I trust, and beef quality assurance certified producers are answering that call.
And moving into 2020 for the Illinois Beef Association, any goals or just anything we haven't spoke about that you'd like to mention for the new year?
Yeah, you know, big picture, we're going to continue to promote beef to the best of our ability, and we're really fortunate in Illinois to have quite a few local cattlemen's groups that help us promote beef too. So we're definitely going to talk to dietitians, to influencer groups, continue to promote beef's great taste, to continue to promote what a protein-packed product it is, and talk about our farmers that work so hard to raise a quality product every day. On the policy side, we'll go into the spring legislative session in 2020, focused on making sure that farmers can still use antibiotics and work with their veterinarian to develop a herd health plan that works for farmers as individuals, and make sure that farmers can continue to expand their livestock farms or bring back the next generation to continue that family legacy.
That sounds great, Jill. That was Jill Johnson with the Illinois Beef Association here at the Central Illinois Livestocks meeting in Coffeen. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Moving on now into local ag news. The Hillsboro FFA recently participated in the Section Green Hand Bowl and Job Interview Competition in Pena. Quiz Bowl members were required to answer many questions regarding FFA history and membership. The ag sales participants were required to prepare a resume and cover letter, and then were interviewed and judged as though they were actually applying for a job. Maria Hernandez received third out of 13 participants in ag sales, and Hillsboro received second place out of 10 in the Green Hand Bowl. Members of the Green Hand Bowl team were Coral Aller, Melissa Rufus, Magnus Wells, Caden Leibscher, Reese Morford, Cameron Kuiper, and Allie Crummel. And the Hillsboro FFA will also be sponsoring a toy collection drive again this year for Toys for Tots. New unwrapped toys can be placed in collection boxes found in the Hillsboro High School Ag Building and in the main building hallway. Toys will be donated to children in the local area, and donations are due by December 13th. And that'll wrap it up for this Monday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have ag news for us, you can email it to us at WSMI@WSMIradio.com. So for this Monday morning, November 25th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.